Friday, August 2nd. For the first time since the war started, German planes dropped propaganda leaflets on Great Britain today. The leaflets carried parts of Hitler's speech of 2 weeks ago and were headed, quote, "Last Appeal to Reason by Adolf Hitler," unquote. Throughout the night, two towns in England and Scotland were raided, but damage was slight. Now for the latest news of Europe, we bring you reports direct from London and Berlin with an analysis of the news by Linton Wells in New York. First to the British capital for the report of Larry Lester. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Britain is concerned today with what they call the Nazi propaganda effort to persuade America that Germany is making gigantic preparations to invade England. To a report by a New York correspondent that the German army is placing multiple lines of cannon along the German-occupied coast of the English Channel so as to lay a 75-mile-long barrage against England's east coast, Britain military experts have a ready answer. They say that German artillery fire to cover an attempted channel crossing would be largely limited to the hours of daylight. And except within short range of the French coast, the guns would not be very effective. Further, that guns would not be of much value in covering an actual landing on the English coast, although a certain number of the largest caliber guns might have the necessary range. These experts say that the report of these gun emplacements is probably based on the installation of a certain number of batteries to interfere with British surface craft operating in the narrowest reaches of the channel, just as batteries were installed on the Belgian coast in the last war. It is pointed out that the Royal Air Force should have no difficulty in finding out whether these guns really exist or whether they are part of the war of nerves. So far as I can recall, the only mention of German gun emplacements in a British Air Force communique came several weeks ago. At that time, it was stated that heavy gun positions at Calais had been bombed. If the reconnaissance planes of the Royal Air Force have spotted any more German gun positions on the Channel coast, the Air Ministry hasn't seen fit to make the information public. Apparently, Germany cannot be much worried about a paper shortage. Early this morning, southern and southwestern districts in England and one in Wales were the targets for Germany's first leaflet raid on Britain. It was the size of the leaflets that made them unusual. They were four-page sheets, almost as large as a tabloid newspaper. They carried a full report of Chancellor Hitler's latest speech to the Reichstag on July 19th and were entitled, quote, "A Last Appeal to Reason" by Adolf Hitler. Police officers and air raid wardens were ordered to pick them up, but many were retrieved by civilians. The leaflets are much valued as souvenirs. One lucky man who secured a bundle which had failed to open after hitting a roof with a heavy thud said he was taking them down to his factory to sell at a shilling apiece. The proceeds should go to the Red Cross. The more destructive side of the German raids on Britain last night was limited in scope. Only a few bombs were dropped at scattered points, says the Ministry of Home Security, adding that damage was slight and casualties were few. From today onward, persons in England who are worried about friends and relatives in German-occupied territory, and in Germany and Italy themselves, will be able to write to them. Delivery may take a few weeks, for the procedure is said to be rather elaborate. But this is the first time since the start of the war that letters by British subjects to enemy territory have been permitted. There is a defense regulation which forbids communication with the enemy. The letters must be of a purely personal nature and give no indication of the locality from which they are sent. With Thomas Cook and Sons as agents, the letters will be forwarded to Lisbon. The campaign by a certain part of the London press against the British Minister of Information, Alfred Duff Cooper, reached a new high yesterday in the reporting of Mr. Cooper's speech in the House of Commons. The Daily Express, in an eight-column banner headline, declares that, quote, "Duff Cooper is in a fury," unquote. The Express is referring to Mr. Duff Cooper's vigorous defense of his ministry's methods used to gather information from the public. Like an American statistical organization compiling a straw vote, the Minister of Information has sent agents around to question housewives on incidental subjects in order to fathom public opinion here. The British Foreign Office has just announced that two other British subjects have been arrested by Japan in Korea. We return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lasser reporting from London. Here's a dispatch from Moscow. Newspapers gave prominent position today to a dispatch of the official news agency TASS reporting clashes between workers and police at Helsinki and other Finnish cities yesterday and alleging that police beat many women and old men in dispersing meetings of the Society for Friendship and Peace with the Soviet Union. From Bucharest, Romania, unconfirmed reports were circulated in military quarters today of unusual military activity along the western frontier of Russia. Now the news from the German capital by Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. Germans this morning learned for the first time of the sea battle in the South Atlantic between British auxiliary cruiser Alcantara and a German armed raider. The Germans had no details of their own, not even the name of the ship. The Wilhelmstrasse this morning let it be known it was highly pleased with Mr. Molotov's speech yesterday. Final figures on the losses of the Dutch army are given out in Berlin today. They were 2,890 killed, 7,000 wounded, 29 missing. And here's Ed Hartridge, who arrived back from Paris just 42 minutes ago.
Last night, British planes were done over the Rhineland. The official German communique giving some of the details of this British aerial activity has not been released as yet. And I'm only giving you my own report. Last night, as the sun was just setting, we crossed what was once the old Belgian-German border. As we drove deeper and deeper into the smoky industrial area of the Rhineland, we had a chance to see the night defenses against the British attacks take hold. Occasionally, German reconnaissance planes would fly overhead, just checking up to see if the blackout was in order. And we would see a lone German bomber flying in from the west, no doubt returning from one of the raids over England or the Channel waters. The crews of the anti-aircraft batteries, all the important bridges and junctions, were getting ready, replacing their fatigue caps with steel helmets. When darkness came on, the searchlights went into action. These fingers of light raced through the clear evening sky. Our armor chauffeur told us that just about the only way to discover if there's an air raid alarm while driving on the road at night was to watch the searchlights. If they seem to be going off chasing into the sky, they're probably after some British plane. And that is what happened, or so we thought. He stopped the car and told us to get off the road. We'd been driving along without any lights on the Reich's Autobahn. Those instructions seemed to be superfluous. But the Rhineland is the number one danger zone of Germany today. And the cars, using the easily recognizable double-track highways, are not supposed to show any lights, unless act as involuntary guides to British planes into this section. Then in a little resort town in which we stopped, had its own air raid alarm, about 2 a.m. We heard British planes flying overhead. That is, we presumed they were enemy planes because of the anti-aircraft activity. And probably because this town and its hotel were so small and insignificant, the air raid warden did not force us to get out of a warm bed and go down into a cold air raid shelter. But that is not tolerated elsewhere in the industrial section of the Rhine. Then this morning, while driving through Hanover, we saw one of the results of a British visit on Thursday night. And it was one of those horrible accidents of the war. According to the German police on duty at the site of the bombing, two British planes were flying above the clouds at the time. Two bombs, probably 50 kilos or 110 pounds each, fell into a middle-class apartment section of Hanover. One landed in the street while the other tore through a five-story building. They exploded in the cellar where the tenants had taken refuge during the alarm. Three of the six killed are still buried under the debris, while 10 others were seriously injured and 9 others suffered minor injuries. Well, the Rhineland is not the most pleasant and restful place to live in Germany these grim days of the war. This is Edwin Hartridge returning now to Columbia, New York.
Here in New York is Lenton Wells to give you more news and his analysis of late developments. Mr. Wells.
World chanceries are still buzzing over Foreign Commissar Molotov's speech before the Supreme Soviet at Moscow yesterday. After emphasizing that there was little hope for improved relations between the Soviet Union and the United States and England, or for a rupture of Russo-German friendship, Molotov envisaged a world imperialist struggle between England and the United States on the one hand and Germany and Italy on the other, which would destroy Britain and America. He stressed that in such a struggle, the USSR would remain strictly neutral. To those who lived in Red Russia, the clear implication of Molotov's remarks was this. Stalin intends Russia aloof from war involvement until the present combatants so exhaust themselves that they will be easy prey to both the Red Army and the communist philosophy. Then Russia will act. In the meantime, the Kremlin will attempt to play one side against the other, that is, Germany, Italy, and Japan against Britain and the United States, hopeful that the United States will enter the fracas and thereby start on the road to self-destruction. This much is certain. There was no consolation for the British in Molotov's speech. And the best proof of that is supplied by Berlin, where, as Bill Shire reported this morning, the Nazis expressed hearty approval of it, despite reports, too, that Stalin has concentrated 200,000 Red troops in sections of western Poland near German-occupied territory and within easy moving distance of Romania. The Spanish press has intensified its campaign demanding the return of Gibraltar to Spain. The influential España has printed a warning to Britain that nothing will prevent Spain from helping to create a new order in Europe, which will give to each what he deserves and to each what is his. While this manifestly indicates pressure to force Franco to cast his lot with Germany and Italy and enter the war, authoritative quarters in London say that the Falangist leader has resolved to stay out of it despite the extension of the British blockade to include the Spanish and Portuguese coasts. Each passing day sees Japan growing more bumptious. Yesterday, you remember, the Kanoya government formally revealed that its domestic program calls for totalitarianism at home and its foreign program total disregard for the rights of other nations in the Orient. It was announced that Japan was organizing a greater East Asia around Japan, China, and Manchukuo without consideration of the views and wishes of other governments. At Tokyo today, the Foreign Office spokesman admitted that this newly created Japanese sphere of influence would include the South Sea territories. But besides mentioning French Indochina and the Netherlands East Indies, the spokesman refused to elaborate beyond saying that the sphere of influence would include the South Seas generally. The South Seas generally would certainly include the Philippine Islands and the United States Naval Station at Guam, which is located amidst the Japanese Mandate Islands known as the Carolines in the Western Pacific. London is rather pessimistic over the Far Eastern outlook, particularly now that more British subjects have been arrested in Japan, as Larry Lesser told us from London this morning. But Whitehall does not believe that Japan will overstep bounds which will bring her into a war with either the United States or Great Britain. Authoritative British spokesman said Anglo-Japanese relations were expected to get worse before they got better, and that Britain would not surrender Hong Kong without a fight. In Washington, Secretary of State Hull and other high administration leaders declined to comment on Japan's proclaimed new policy. When pressed for a statement, Mr. Hull said simply that he has no comment to make for the present, which implies, of course, that the State Department will very likely have something to say later on the subject. The consensus of Washington opinion appears to be that Japanese foreign policy for domination of the entire Orient and South Seas will widen the breach between the United States and Japan. But no one believes that it will lead to a war, unless, of course, Japan should make aggressive moves against the Philippines, Guam, or American military forces in Shanghai, where Japanese-inspired terrorist activities are on the increase in the international settlement. The Japanese press is becoming increasingly bitter in its attacks on the United States. We are now termed an uncivilized, aggressive Western power which seeks to extract wealth from the Far East. The eyes of much of the world are focused on a 10,000-ton American passenger freighter named the Excalibur, which sailed from Lisbon yesterday, aboard which, incidentally, I returned from Europe as a refugee last October. On board the Excalibur today are the Duke and Duchess of Windsor en route to the Bahamas by way of Boston and New York. What the world is waiting to see is if the Nazis will take any action against this American ship and perhaps remove the Duke as a hostage. Certainly, the Nazis will have every opportunity to do so. The Excalibur will follow its regular transatlantic course. It will be lighted up at night like a house of fire, and as a consequence of Washington disapproval, it is not being convoyed by any British warship. The Duke and Duchess have paid their money and are taking their chances.
And with this analysis by Linton Wells from New York, Columbia concludes this morning's report of European development. Earlier, we heard Larry Lesser reporting from London, Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin. Harry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.